It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. If you're the parent of a young white boy, how do you raise your son to recognize his privilege in the era of President Trump and Me Too? New York Magazine's current issue tries to answer the question in part with How to Raise a Boy, a collection of 29 answers to what very well might be an impossible question. Joining me now to discuss his essay for the series is Will Leach, founding editor of the respected sports blog Deadspin, now a contributing editor at New York Magazine and senior writer at MLB. Hi, Will. Thanks so much for coming on WNYC today.
Please. Thank you for having me.
And your essay takes us back to sometime in 1987 when your father decided it was time for you to learn how to shoot a gun in order to hunt, even though you write that you'd never seen your father hunt or even heard your father talk about hunting. So why did he want that for you?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in central Illinois. Illinois is basically Nebraska with Chicago at the top. And I'm from the Nebraska part. It's very rural. And, you know, my father was an electrician, a blue-collar union man. And, you know, he kind of had this bookish son. And so I think he felt, he almost felt like, you know, some people at work saying, your son needs to get tougher and go shoot guns and be a man and so on. So I think he felt, even though it was not necessarily his inclination, that it was something that he needed to kind of instill in me a little bit. And the, as you've in the essay, it turns out half dangerous, half comical with how it turns out. But you know, I think he felt like very apologetic and very kind of upset about it. And you know, now I have two sons. I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I find myself now, you know, they're only a little bit younger than I was when that happened. And finding myself like, what kind of lessons, like my father, he felt like my father wanted me to do this, I have to pass this on, even though it didn't necessarily fit with the child or even necessarily the times. And I think, you know, the crux of the essay is kind of about that notion of trying to figure out what is kind of traditional masculinity and what you kind of give on to your son in an age where that's starting to feel like almost more and more toxic.
How was target practice back then, by the way? How do you remember it?
I remember a very loud sound that lasted for about 2 or 3 days, and the gun ending up behind me ending up lying down. You know, and the nice thing, I guess the one nice thing about rural Illinois is you can shoot into the distance and no one, not anything that anyone would notice. There's no one really around. So fortunately, no one was able to get hurt other than my pride and my father realizing, okay, so my son is clearly not a hunter.
We'll get into some more of the particulars, but the overarching question is profound. You ask yourself if you're a jerk for cheering your two boys on because of their privilege, or if you'd be a jerk if you don't cheer your children on because, after all, they're your children. Can these two noble instincts coexist?
It's difficult, to be honest, you know, and it's very strange because, you know, my sons are, like, they're beautiful. Like, I love them so much, and they're so promising, and they're so smart, and they're so curious, and everything that I want. But you know, you would want your children to be. But you know, we've clearly seen the direction that society is going. I think as an unquestionably positive direction. That you know, the idea that there are going to be more and more opportunities for people that are not white males for quite good reason. One of the things I kind of touch on in the piece is how a lot of, I think I've been able to have a little bit of success in my career, knock on wood. And one of the reasons for that, I would argue, even though I struggled for a long time, was this general notion of, when you are a straight white male, that you don't have to stand in for anyone other than yourself. I was able to struggle. I was able to have my down periods. I was able to not do that well, but not have to worry about other than just me, just taking care of me. And because of that, I think it kind of put me at an easier place than a lot of other people. And I think the direction is changing in that a little bit. So for me, the struggle is, sure, I can tell my children hard work and perseverance will pay off because it paid off for your father, but that is not even close to the whole story. And I think that kind of struggle and that kind of push and pull, it's a difficult thing to kind of figure out.
Listeners, we're talking to Will Leach, contributor to New York Magazine's collection of essays on the question of how to raise a boy. And anyone relating to this, if there are parents out there raising boys, particularly white boys, how do you reconcile that you're raising your kids into a world of privilege for them. Maybe you're still realizing, even though you're a grown up with kids, realizing how much white male privilege there still is in the world, and asking yourself, as Will Leach is, well, what does that mean for how I should raise my son? Or maybe you've got concerns now that other people are speaking up and claiming their places in a world of increasing equality, we hope increasing equality, and you find yourself conflicted with worrying about your white male sons at the same time as cheering for more equality. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You write about a parent-teacher conference you attended last year for your then five-year-old son. You weren't expecting much from the meeting, but the teacher had quite a bit to say about your son, and you wrote about some of that. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I'm always wary of people trying to gauge the intelligence of five-year-olds. Like, I want my five-year-old to eat grass and roll down hills till he gets dizzy. Like, the idea of testing him has always felt kind of against the idea of childhood. But, you know, you have a parent-teacher conference. My son was in pre-K, and we met with the teacher, which was, we were lucky to even have the opportunity to be able to be in pre-K and do that. And she said, your son is remarkable. He's very smart, and he's very talented. He's very social. He's very curious. He picks the right friends. And then she said something that kind of stuck with me. She said, you know, if I would want every kid in this class to act like your son. Now, on one hand, that's wonderful. What a wonderful thing to hear about your son. And listen, I want my children to do amazing things. I want them to invent cold fusion. I want them to pilot to Mars. I want them to do amazing things. But you just can't help, you know, to start to wonder, okay, so what, like, I think my kid is great, but everybody thinks their kid is great. What is it about my child that is speaking so much to this teacher? It made me feel uncomfortable, the idea that, you know, he, as proud as I am of him, how much of this is external? How much of this is, are there other kids in the class that are just as bright but don't kind of have the same circumstances as him? Should I be, I'm not going to root against my son, but, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, clearly what we've seen in the last year or couple of years is just kind of this awakening and this emergence and kind of this reckoning in a bit. And it makes you really question so many things that you've kind of taken for granted as the default on the form, as I called it in the piece. For me, it's a hard thing to kind of reconcile that idea of my kid is being praised, that's great, but how much of it is this and how much of it is this? And also, I want my kid to be normal. I don't want him to feel like he has to be special and has to be this regular thing. It's really a hard kind of thing to balance. So I found myself like almost reeling and trying to, and I know this, and this is almost an over-intellectual exercise in and of, I should just be happy that my kid is doing well. But you do find yourself wondering how much of that is part of the problem, and how much a part of it is a larger societal problem, and that certain kids get labeled certain things just because of kind of expectations.
Let's take a call. Linda in Uniondale, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I've taught classes at the graduate level in terms and in regard to diversity and trying to get white adult males to acknowledge that they're in a position of privilege in this society, and maybe on a global scale, is difficult. And you get a lot of backlash, and it's an uphill battle. I think this is wonderful what the author has written about and is trying to say and do, but I think for the overarching idea to get white men in general to understand that they are privileged, and it's going to be difficult. And yes, starting at a young age, raising them that way, but not everybody is looking at the thing at the situation as the author is.
It's hard to get people to see what might be invisible to them as structures in society, right? If they're proceeding as individuals, doing the best they can, working hard, achieving things. It feels like, what was the line Mitt Romney used in 2012? I built this, you built this, whatever it was, without realizing the social structures that help people who start businesses
exactly.
In the United States, because they're invisible to them in many ways.
Right, because many times there was a lot of backlash from white men because they just didn't get it. They didn't understand that if you know, yes, it's not to say that you wouldn't have struggles as a white man and that you wouldn't have issues to deal with, but given if you were possibly a minority, a black man, a brown, what have you, it would be even harder. I don't know if that sounds too...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there would be structural biases against you that would change the odds. Will, what are you thinking as you listen to Linda?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. But, you know, another kind of big conflict in the piece is I want my children to be assertive. that's another issue. I don't want my children to, like, go around. I want them to be aware of their privilege. I want to be aware of any blessings that they've had and to be certainly to be aware of where they are in the world. But I also don't want them to walk around apologizing for themselves.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to get across to a
right.
kid. I want my kid to do wonderful things. I want both of my sons, they are both wonderful children, and I want them to have all the happiness and all the success in the world. So to teach that lesson, to teach that, a lot of it really does come down to this idea of assertiveness. And I would say that it was very, talk about privilege, like one of the privileges I had was that idea that I could just be youthfully cocky and sure of myself with no actual evidence to back that up whatsoever. But that becomes a benefit, right? That's a benefit for anyone to kind of have that self-assurance and that positivity. And I want my children to have that. But there's a very thin line, I think one of the things that the piece kind of touches on is our current environment, both social and political. There's a very thin line between being confident and assertive and being abusive of that power. And that is a difficult line to get across to your children because it's a difficult line for adults to understand.
And there are things that men can do with whatever assertiveness they develop that... doesn't, you know, be like, oh, I'm not going to apply for a job so someone in a historically disadvantaged category can get it. But if you have a job, you can call out other men at work if they're being sexist in any way. You can make sure you're mentoring people of different backgrounds than you. You can make sure men aren't dominating the discussion at meetings in ways that they may not even recognize if women's voices are being locked out. You can be a male ally in that sense and use some of your assertiveness like that while still pursuing your career.
Yeah, and I think so, and I think that, and you know, a lot of this is the story kind of discusses the idea of whether this is a zero-sum game, the idea that someone must fail or for someone else to succeed, which is its own kind of debate. But, yeah, you can do the best you can, but, you know, it's easy for me now to say, well, I'm going to make sure to be a good ally in all of these regards because I've already used all of the kind of, like, male privilege to get
yeah.
me to this point in the first place.
Right.
I wasn't thinking about that 10 years ago. I was just doing.
Right.
That wasn't terrible. I wasn't a bad person, but I was also just striving forward, not really thinking. All I was thinking about was, like, I want to succeed, so I'm going to do this. And that, and on one hand, I think that is very blinkered, and I think that hurts in a lot of ways. On the other hand, I find it kind of undeniable that it did benefit me in my career. And now that I'm worrying about the next generation and what happens, we're seeing how things are changing. That's the struggle. Like, to me, that's the central struggle of the piece, is the idea of I want my children to be aware and to be good and to be good allies as idea is, but I also can't deny that kind of dumb blindness that I had did benefit me earlier in my career.
Carla in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carla. Carla, you there? Carla once, Carla twice. Let's try Tara in Island Heights. Hi, Tara, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you. It's great to talk to you. Listen, I have two sons. One's 21, one's 25, and one is 3.
Uh-huh.
Are you there?
So I've
already raised basically two men.
And you've got a little one.
And I'm raising one now again in a new generation. And I would say that the two biggest important things for raising my sons up to be, I think they're pretty fabulous men, is responsibility and gratitude. I think that it starts from when they're young, that they have to appreciate all of the privileges that they have, and they have to give back in any little ways that they can. So whether that's you know, packing up toys they don't use anymore when they're little, or, you know, donating to the food pantry, or going out and picking up trash at the beach, or, you know, as they get older, they can do bigger things. But, like, even with little kids, like, that they just appreciate, say thank you to people.
You're almost sort of two generations of mom rolled into one, since you have two adult sons and you have one as young as three. You said three, right?
Right, I said three.
So,
and it really is a blessing because, you know, I actually have two girls in between there, too. I have a 16-year-old and a 10-year-old girl.
Right.
Go
ahead.
I'm parenting with hindsight now, which is what, you know, when you're first going through it with your first child, everything is, you know, it's a learning curve and you're learning. But by the time you have a 3-year-old, it's your fifth kid and, you know, your oldest is on his own.
Particular topic of masculinity, raising boys, do you feel like there's anything you learned either from raising your two adult males or from the way sort of times have changed and your awareness of the world is different than when you were younger, that you're raising your 3-year-old boy differently?
You know, I'm raising him not, I don't think differently in like the primary way, but the world has changed in that when my older sons were young, it was a very, like, there was a very bold line between the girl pink aisle and the boy blue aisle, and like the toys were boy toys and girl toys, and the dress up was, you know, princess or construction worker. Mm-hmm. And now that the line has blurred and, you know, there's a lot more acceptance of people, no matter how they identify, like, that's changed in the way that kids play too, where boys, it's okay to play with Barbies. It's okay to, you know, put a crown on if you feel like dressing up. Where that never, you know, that really wasn't
a question
25
at
years
that
ago,
time.
Like,
Tara,
kids really didn't play like that.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your call. And your essay, Will Leach, from New York Magazine, gets to this, right? You kind of struggle with the tension of not playing into gender normativity like you were raised in, and at the same time, not trying to stop your two sons from doing what they might consider normal boy activities just because you're trying to prove some sort of postgraduate thesis, is I think the way you put it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I'm not going to go in the same way, like my younger son, he is obsessed with Wonder Woman. So he wanted to dress up as Wonder Woman. And that's great. Like, that's totally, like, that's awesome. I'm going to support that. He loves Wonder Woman because Wonder Woman is awesome and really tough and great. So I'm totally going to support that. But I also, like, recognize that one of the reason he likes Wonder Woman is not because I'm interested in gender normativity. He likes Wonder Woman because Wonder Woman kicks butt and Wonder Woman is really tough. And because they're boys and they fight and they wrestle and they do all the things that boys do, and the idea that I'm going to sit them down and be like, let's have a discussion about aggressiveness and assertiveness in society. I mean, they should be boys. I want them to be boys. And, you know, that's part of the struggle, too, is the idea of I want them to be able to, like, I don't have the answers on this stuff. So the idea, it would seem awfully presumptuous of me to go to them and say, guys, easy with the wrestling. I know this is, like, naturally the thing that you guys all want to do all the time, but come on, let's be careful about what this could mean for you in 15 years. Like, I don't know. I don't right. know the answers to the question. So I don't want to, like, do so. For me, a lot of this is letting them be them and letting them figure out who they are and guiding them along the way, but also not weighing them down with dogma. And I think that's a balance, and that's difficult. And again, every parent, the dirty secret, as I've discovered, and as Tara would know as much as anyone, because she has had kids from so many different generations, we make mistakes all the time. Don't tell my children, but we make mistakes all the time. And so you do your best. And I feel like this is another thing to constantly be aware of as a parent, but I think it's an important one.
Yeah, and apologizing to your children for your mistakes is not such a bad idea either, right? So,
and that's not something that was necessarily popular in generations before this.
That's right. Carla in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for having this conversation.
Sure.
I think it's really important. I'm a parent in Brooklyn. I have two sons, and we have two moms in our family. And for my partner and myself, this has been really important all along to have conversations with our kids. And our approach has been to just have small conversations often. Like when we go to the movies, we talk about why is Black Panther important beyond just being an awesome film? Mm-hmm. And is it maybe more important? Is it bigger for some people? Does it resonate more? And then just when we're out in the world, we find that if we just talk critically with our kids, it really encourages them to think critically and observe and think about their own roles as boys, as white kids in the world that we live in. And we find that, as opposed to having, these big monumental discussions once a year, by mm-hmm. just kind of doing it a little bit all the time, it really has given our kids their own framework for thinking about it. And I think it's also really given them agency in thinking about, what they're noticing and what they can do in the world.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Well, rather than, Carla says once a year, the talk about pick your topic, it gets woven in to the banter that you have with your kids. And maybe part of the trick is to not sound too preachy so they don't turn against their parents, trying to always instill something that, that seems like it's being forced from the top, but to really make these things integral.
Yeah, and also, frankly, society is helping in this regard. Growing up in my rural town, Illinois, the idea of someone having two mothers just never happened. It was never an issue. And now both of my children have several friends who have two mothers or two fathers, and right. No one finds it even the slightest bit different. So for me, that helps. That makes a conversation anytime that something is. Something that they see in their life that doesn't even seem slightly unusual is progress. That's a move in the right direction. And in the same way that someone maybe 20 years ago would have seen my son dressed up as Wonder Woman and thought it was really kind of strange, now they're like, awesome, you look great, Wonder Woman rules. And so I think there is something to do that. But it's a series of conversations. You're right, and this goes back to the idea that you don't want to be dogmatic. You don't want to be dogmatic and say, this is the way that it is, because, again, my children are young, but they're going to get older and question me more and more. So the more I actually tell right. them, no, this is absolutely the case, the whole don't go into that room, well, no matter what you do, never go into that room, of course they're going to go into that
room. Right.
So you have to be aware of that as well.
Carla, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And other essays in New York Magazine series also reflect on that tension that you were just describing. Alden Jones, for example, writes about what to do about your boy's love for guns if you find that your boy is just suddenly into guns, even if you did nothing to promote it, and your children are still very young. But, you told in your article your own father getting you into guns story. Have you started asking yourself, how you would talk about guns in this era of mass shooting to your kids if they start to glorify them after seeing action movies or whatever?
Yeah, certainly, the idea, they're boys. They can take it. They both turned a banana into a gun. They have. There is something about it. And for me, that's on one, I think there's two levels you do that. One is just being an adult about it. If you spend the night at someone's house, ask the parents if they have a gun in the house. And there's nothing wrong if they have a gun in the house. I just feels like information that I think as a parent would like to know. But also that understanding of, so there's an essay in there, the idea about taking away toy guns. And we don't have a lot of toy guns in our house. However, the idea that if my kid takes a banana and treats it as a gun, not screaming at him, explaining he's doing something horribly wrong. I think there are levels to all of these conversations, and I don't necessarily have to immediately leap to school shootings.
Yeah.
The idea of a gun is a danger. To me, even if guns were rare or they were prevalent or there were school shootings or not school shootings, guns are that's just a basic conversation they should have with your kids regardless of kind of generation. So I feel like that, one nice thing is, listen, right now I've got this essay in this magazine. It's very timed to school shootings and what's going on in politics and the idea of bullying, and it's very kind of timely to the discussion. But kids are raised all the time when things are not timely and are not urgent and not in the news. I feel like there's got to be a level of consistency across that. I don't want to constantly be reacting to the news. You really want to have like a baseline of understanding for them and then be able to adjust when something, when they're asking about something, but to really keep a lot of stuff in the family and in-house as opposed to constantly kind of veering, like, did you see this in the news? What do you think about this? I feel like there's got to be like a normalcy outside of just the news cycle.
Here's, I think, a conflicted, struggling mom a little bit in this area. Actually, I don't know from the name whether you're a mom or a dad. Robin in Manhattan. Hi, you're on WNYC.
I'm a mom. Yes, I'm mom of white teenage male boys. And I think it's hard right now for them to figure out, you know, how do they feel good about themselves? What is a good man? And I think, you know, the issues as boys grow older are more complex. So maybe you could address that.
How are you addressing or what do you find the hardest part, Robin?
Well, I think that white male privilege is addressed at school and at home. But not how to feel good about being a white male at the same time, you know, doing both at the same time.
Will?
I mean, certainly I don't think it ever benefits any child to walk around feeling bad or guilty about who they are. I don't think there's any question about that. I certainly don't want to instill my children to constantly going around walking, apologizing, even if historically we may have something to apologize for. So I think there's an element of that there. But I, you know, a lot of that comes in with general notions of self-esteem and self-awareness that are important for any child, I would say, not just one necessarily with a potentially privileged background like myself or my son. That, so I'm certainly, if I've ever veered over the line into making them feel guilty about who they are, or to make them feel bad, or to feel like they to feel weaker, or to feel like they need to apologize, that's like, I feel like that's, I've made a mistake. That's not something that I actually want to do. But I do think it is important. Maybe not at six. Like my three-year-old, I just need to stop him from eating glue. Like, I don't need to worry about all of these conversations yet. But I do think that it's something that has to be constantly kept in mind as they grow older. Not so much walk around feeling bad for what you and the people before you have done, but certainly be aware that, like, one of the issues we've already talked about in this conversation is how difficult it is to get people who have always been, like a lot of white males, that have always been kind of blinded to this idea, very difficult to get them to understand that. It's a lot easier if you can get them to understand that earlier. And so while I don't want them to go around feeling terrible and feeling guilty, I do think it's important to understand the world as it is, as necessarily, not necessarily the world that they might immediately see.
So there's all of that, but Robin, I totally hear what you're saying, I think, which is that the old scripts that deserve to be discredited are being discredited, and there's a lot of language around that now. The new scripts that include self-esteem for white males, but in a more integrated way with everybody else, are still being written. And that's what you're struggling with your teenagers, right?
Right. And I also think there's not, right now, white males, particularly in power, who are role modeling, you know, for them.
I find that difficult to argue with.
And on that point of agreement, we might as well end it with Will Leach, who is the founding editor of the very respected and now lamented sports blog Deadspin. He's now a contributing editor at New York Magazine and a senior writer at MLB. And he's one of 24, is it, people who contributed essays to New York Magazine's current project, How to Raise a Boy. Will, thank you so much.
Please, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.